Hello, this is David Disraeli. It is Thursday, November 30th on Disraeli News. And today we have two special guests to talk to us about the landscape for national real estate, in particular single family homes and income producing properties. We have Ron Phillips and Heather Marchant from RP Capital, a company that I have known for many, many years and is very unique in terms of their offerings. Ron, why don't you introduce yourself, your company, and then Heather.
Yeah, so I'm super happy to be here. We've been in the investment property business since 2005. Prior to that, I rehabbed houses and things like that, but in the rental or income property producing space, helping our clients since 2005. So almost a couple of decades now. And we've helped thousands of people buy properties all across the country. We specialize in that. And Heather's been with me for freaking ever. I don't know.
Forever. Like 15 years we've worked together.
Yeah. Long, long time. And, you know, we really enjoy helping people grow their portfolios and change their lives with investment real estate. The same way that it has for us. And so... Anyway, that's what my company does in a nutshell.
I was introduced to your company through a client of mine that contacted me about setting up an LLC to provide asset protection for his properties. And I found out that his son had actually, I think at that time, purchased like 10 properties. And yeah. I think one of the issues, there's two issues that I wanted to try to address in the short time we have together. One is the concept of owning property sight unseen, or if not sight unseen, you know, on a absentee basis. People here or throughout my 30 plus year career have tended to buy properties that were in the area they knew. Well, I want to challenge that by saying is because you live in Dallas-Fort Worth, the best criteria for deciding that's where you should invest? Or is it finding the best place to invest and letting your investment criteria dictate the, you know, the geography? So I've gotten some pushback from clients that have money to invest about, you know, their comfort level with Texas. And after meeting your company, I discovered that there's enormous opportunities of much higher returns, especially cash flow. If you want to buy in Central Texas with interest rates at 6 or 7% and cash flow, you're going to have to put 50% down or pay cash. That is not true in many, many parts of the country. If you just look at the portfolio of properties that are on your website right this minute. So Ron, why don't you address the national scope of your company and the initial reluctance that some people might have to not be able to check on their properties, you know, once a month or once a quarter or whatever, which.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, actually, because we meet people who have, you know, decent sized portfolios where they live. Mm-hmm. And they start to, you know, put up some kind of a barrier to in investing, or at least even thinking about contemplating investing outside of where they live, because they want control of what's going on. And then I ask them, in almost every single case, like, how many times have you actually driven by your property? And then they kind of laugh and they say, yeah, I haven't driven by it at all. And I'm like, well, I don't understand what the difference is then. I mean, you don't go buy it. It's if you have a property manager where you live, someone who's taking care of the properties for you, it's the exact same thing. It doesn't make any difference whether it's in your backyard or it's, you know, a couple thousand miles away from you. Right. Ultimately, someone is taking care of the property there. And we believe really strongly in invest, you know, live where you want to, invest where it makes sense. I live in Charleston, South Carolina. Where I live, you can't cash flow, again, unless you put probably more than 50% down. It's absurd, the prices here. It doesn't work. But that doesn't mean that I shouldn't own investment property or that I should have to put 50, 60, 70% down on a property or pay cash for it to make it work.
Yep.
Because it's all about return on investment. And if I have to pay cash, you know, for a $500,000 property just to make the thing cash flow, I guarantee you that the actual cash on cash return is very, very low. And so we just believe, I mean, live where you want to live.
Yeah.
I mean, if you love Southern California, live there. If you love Charleston like I do, live there. But I don't own any investments in Charleston. It doesn't make any sense. I own them outside of Charleston and own them all over the place. And I don't care where that place is so long as the economics are good in the area, so long as the numbers and, you know, the economics are going in the right direction, and so long as I can cash flow the property and have a decent, you know, decent growth. And I say decent growth leveraged. I mean, you can get 3% appreciation, 2, 3% appreciation. Leveraged is decent growth.
Yeah.
It is. I want both of you to tell me, because I know you have both of you own properties yourselves. In other words, you eat your own cooking. how did you both, I guess we'll start with Heather, overcome the inclination to say, I really know this area of Phoenix where I live, or in my case, Cedar Park, which is north of Austin. I know what's going on here. I know what's for sale. I know the schools. I have my boots on the ground, but that's a limiting factor when you're looking at absolute return. So how did each of you cross that threshold from, I know Charleston, I know Austin, I know Salt Lake, but I'm going to invest 1,500 miles away? Heather, how did you and your husband, how did you guys make that leap?
So a couple of things. Number one, I live in Salt Lake City, like you mentioned, and it doesn't cash flow here. In fact, we've looked in the last cycle during 2009, 10, 11, I went and looked at properties all over the place here to go, yeah, Salt Lake's a great market. It's a great appreciating market, but it doesn't cash flow. So if I stick to my fundamentals, that another one that we haven't talked about too is landlord-friendly legislation, that eliminates several markets in the country. And so if you stick to your fundamentals of having cash flowing property, growing economics, you have your demand for rentals, that you're not going to have high vacancy rates, and then you have that landlord-friendly legislation, it eliminates a lot of the markets in the country. And so if I stick to my fundamentals, it's really easy to see the forest through the trees, right? To be able to say, okay, forest for the trees. I mean, to be able to say, okay, this doesn't make sense where I live. This makes sense. And then take action. I would say my first rental property, I had been helping clients buy rental properties for probably 4 or 5 years. My husband was in grad school and we were wanting to make sure we graduated with as little debt as possible. And so we ended up buying our first rental property when I'd been helping people for years buy property. And that first property still was kind of nerve-wracking to be able to sign on the dotted line and say, I own a property in North Carolina. That was my first rental from Salt Lake City to North Carolina. And I was nervous. I think it's good to be nervous. If you're not having any hesitation, then maybe you're being a little too bullish on it.
Or so, you're in a FDIC situation. Yeah. Low yield. So I'm going to ask, you know, we didn't rehearse this. So
So
tell me about your due diligence process. Just
sure.
Because I want to get to Ron, and we're not going to have a whole lot of time to get into, vetting the electricians in North Carolina. There's a David Disraeli approach, which is probably analysis paralysis, but and I've been through it with your company, and I've vetted several properties and checked every number on your spreadsheet, and it's all real. And I'm a finance person. That's my background. But did you fly out there? Tell me about the process.
So I can vet the numbers on the pro forma, right? I can look up taxes. I can get an insurance quote. So I know my costs are right. I know if the management agreement, if the costs on the pro forma are accurate. So that's the first thing that's pretty painless to do. And then I never flew out there. No, I had pictures. I had an inspection report. I had an appraisal that protected me to make sure that the value is good. And then I just got out of my own way. You know, I mean, it's powerful to take action. And I have a client right now who's just said to me, man, Heather, like, I want to get started. And I just have all these fears. And she's listed out her fears. We've spoken two or three times now. And I finally just said, I'm like, look, it's really at this point, it's taking that first step. And you're going to have to just get out of your own way and test it out. And I said, we don't have to test all of the money that you have. Let's test a small portion. Let's try one and see how you feel. Because honestly, David, I don't think there's a way that you're ever going to have every single relationship and every single thing vetted and covered. The property management company has all of those electricians and people that can help repair your property. So I didn't even feel like I had to worry about that because they have those relationships.
Right.
And so that's and then I just did it again and again. It's like playing Monopoly in real life. It's so fun.
I present this to my clients as sort of mailbox money because a lot of people that have never owned rental properties, I have, it was unpleasant for various reasons. The woman overpaid me, so it did soothe my pain. It was an emergency situation. She had to have a place and was willing to pay 50% more than what the thing was actually worth.
Wow.
So I took the money. So and took it off the market. You know, I was trying to sell it. Anyway, she just approached me, knocked on the door, and said, I'm building a house. It's not ready. I've got to move out of my other house. I sold it. I got three kids. She didn't tell me about three dogs because I didn't know much about vetting tenants back then. And boy, did they make a mess.
Property managers are trained in all of that. So I didn't have to vet my tenants or figure all that
right.
out. They did all of it and did a great job. That house, I sold it in January, actually, of this year. I owned it for 7 years, and I never even had to clean the carpets. I mean, and that's not normal, but man, it was a win for my first
one. Very abnormal.
Really lucky.
Yeah.
Ron, since we're going to come up against the 15-minute mark in a very short time here, you're the founder. You came into this having been an investor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or being in real estate. And you built a company that last count had sold properties in the thousands. I think it's 6,000 or 7,000 total now. Is that right?
Yeah,
more than that.
Now. Yeah.
More, we've sold more than $1 billion worth of real estate.
And it's not like you have 500 agents in an office. This is a small company.
Yeah.
There's 14 people total. And that's most of them are not agents. So,
yeah.
If you can explain, I mean, Heather did a great job explaining the, absentee owner investor mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Some people don't and won't, but a lot of people will once they think through, you know, the fact that they own Tesla. And they're not on the factory floor every day looking at their investment, right? You're trusting other people. You got to trust other people. If you don't, you know, put your money in the bank, hope that FDIC solve it when they need to be, and, you know, good luck. Inflation and taxes will take all your money from you, but you won't lose any principal. So, Ron, how did this come about? You investing and then offering, you know, fully vetted, in some cases, tenant already in place, single family homes. I mean, that's an incredible concept. I've never come across it. I don't think anybody else is doing it on the scale that you are, because you do have to vet so many different people in that whole process. Lenders too.
Yeah. So this all started because I got stuck with some rental properties. I was rehabbing houses, and the lending guidelines for the sale of those properties changed, and I had to have 12 months on title to be able to sell them. So I was just stuck with all these properties. So I had to put tenants in them. I had to turn them into rentals. I didn't want to, and I was a little bit irritated about it, actually. And then when I got into that side of the business, I realized that we had been buying properties from some people who owned rental properties. And I started to talk to them, and then it kind of clicked with me. You know, anytime we wanted to meet with them, they had time. They weren't stressed out like I was running around, you know, chasing contractor. They always had time. They drove really nice cars, and they didn't seem like they were in a hurry to do much of anything. And I started talking to them, and I realized this rental thing's not that bad of a gig. It's actually pretty cool. I just need to stack up a bunch more properties, and life changes, right? Mm-hmm. So then I met a guy who was selling properties to some folks out of California, which was a foreign concept to me, kind of like what you were saying, David. And I was just like, wait a second. There's a whole millions of people who live in areas that they can't do what I am doing right now. I've built a team for myself, right? I have all of the people. I know all the people here. I can just put this together and I can start selling these to people out of state as well. Then I did that, and then that went really well. And I thought, man, okay, well, then there's other markets we should be in. So I just started expanding the markets, and we started teaching our own classes in 2007, I think, 2006, 2007. And then it's just kind of grown from there. And the cool part of this whole story is that once people realize the power of real estate and what it does, which it takes a little while, right? It takes more than one property. It takes a little while. But once they do, 60% of them continue to expand their portfolios. That's our internal number, 60%. So it doesn't take a lot of people to move a whole lot of volume of properties. And when you move a whole lot of volume of properties, you get better deals with the property management companies, you get better deals from the sellers, you get to be well known in the industry where you can actually demand a little bit better deal for the investors, right? So all of that to say that now we're able to do things that other companies can't do for the investors that are coming in, whether they're new or whether they're just expanding their portfolios. And gotcha. So that's where it came from. In a nutshell, that's where it came from. It was me getting thrust into it.
What is it? Necessity is the motherhood of invention.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly right.
Let me run something past both of you guys and see if we're in alignment here. I like to say to Mike, you know, I started out as a stockbroker, and we hated real estate investors.
I'm sure.
We hated discount broker types because it was like hibbida hibbida habbida. You know, where's the exit? That was not wasn't a comfortable conversation. Now people, for at least the last 5 or 6 years, have sought me out to organize structures for estate planning and asset protection planning. And I wound up with lots and lots of clients with multiple properties just because of what I do now. But I like to say that the United States has two tax systems, and ask the client, do you know what those are? And they think it's a trick question, so they're not going to answer me. one for the rich, one for the poor. No. We have one system for the informed, and we have another system for the uninformed. And there are three ways that I have discovered over 37 years total that you can grow money tax-free. I'm talking about put it in, make it grow, take it out. And for example, a client of mine had a lot of equity in his home. He needed to start taking money out of his IRA. We all know what that means, taxes. Yep. And I said, what if you refined your house and lived on the equity for a couple of years, and instead of taking money out of your IRA, start doing Roth conversions so that A, you've got all this money in a tax-free environment, and B, if you wind up not spending it, your kids get a tax-free inheritance. And at first he's like, borrow against my house. So I ran the numbers for him, and he pulled out a few hundred thousand dollars that he's currently, you know, spending and living on. And it cost, you know, what's the tax liability on a loan? Zero. The IRS doesn't get paid, yet the house went up. So it is gain that he's spending, but it's not taxable, okay?
Yeah.
So if you expand that to rental properties with 1031 exchanges where you can move money from one property to another, the stepped-up basis you get at death, I am standing to suggest that on average, a person's equity, the money that they invest, can grow in a tax-free environment. Tax-free meaning at some point you either move it, die, or do a cash-out refinance, and earn 15% conservatively. This is 3% growth, 5% vacancy, 15% compounded on your money. And
yeah, that's conservative.
Does that sound reasonable? I mean, you got to wait. You can't overcome closing costs and commissions and all that in 18 months. But I'm saying 5, 10, 15 years. Maybe sooner, but probably, you know, at least 5 or 6. Does that sound like a reasonable expectation?
Yes.
Yeah. We find most clients are selling and repositioning within 5 to 7 years. And sometimes even shorter. So,
I'd like to set up another follow-up to go through what the portal actually looks like and go through an example property and kind of a thumbnail of the due diligence process. I have taken, Ron, your spreadsheet and deconstructed it and reconstructed it because Heather wouldn't send me the actual raw spreadsheet. So, but I have to do it myself. I'm just, you know, that's how I am. I have to run all the numbers, have all the different formulas, and I have to check them. But we can run through an example property, Kansas City, Oklahoma City, you know, no place fancy where people have to live. And also want to talk about what's happening nationally in terms of prices with the interest rates going up and the fact that the war has caused almost no hiccups in my business, your business, real estate, renting, vacancies. It sounds scary, Middle East war, but the fact is people have to have a place to live. And that's not going to change if Israel's at war with Hamas or Iran gets involved. Or now, if a bomb drops on all major U.S. cities, yes, that will affect your vacancy rate. But we're not expecting that. So if you guys are available next week, I'd love to dig in a little bit more. But this was great information. I'm going to post this and get it sent out and send you guys a copy of it. And we'll take it one step at a time. But I appreciate your time.